The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
When you turn on the evening news, do you see what you want to see or what you need to see? Welcome to Bread for the Journey, Ordinary People Doing Extraordinary Deeds, with your host, Mariana Cacciatore. It seems like more often than not, the good news and people that are making it are buried into a two-minute feature piece near the end of the report. What about giving these people and this kind of news a full hour every week? Now, here's your host, Mariana Cacciatore.
Hello and welcome to the show. This is Mariana Cacciatore, and today I'll be interviewing Christine Ostertag Timmons, author of the book The Upside of Down. This is an incredible story of optimism in the face of adversity, and it fits perfectly with our theme at Bread for the Journey Radio of Ordinary People, Extraordinary Deeds. You'll get to meet her in a few minutes, but first I'd like to talk to you a little bit about Bread for the Journey so you know who we are and why we have a radio show. Bread for the Journey is an organization that is a nonprofit organization that does grassroots neighborhood generosity in 26 cities around the country. And we've been in existence since 1988 for 25 years. And all in all, we've given away $4.5 million. And it's a really sweet organization. We've got just a small paid staff, a couple of us, and we've got 150 volunteers nationwide. And these volunteers form in small groups, giving circles, we call them, in cities all around the country. And we give them nonprofit status with the IRS. We give them a fully operational website, all these guidelines on how to operate a small charity in a way that's very heart-centered and relationship-oriented. And they raise a little bit of money from family and friends and colleagues in their community. Most of the time they send out just a couple of fundraising letters a year. Sometimes they'll have a small fundraising event. And then they pool that money and give it away to a whole range of people and organizations in their local community who are doing things that make the community more vibrant, healthy, just, beautiful. We give grants in the area of children and youth, women and girls, families, elders, things like meeting basic needs, food, work, shelter. We give grants in the area of education. We help support understanding of diversity and equity and justice. We give grants in the areas of environmental sustainability and local foods, the arts, and helping to create strong, vibrant communities. Rather than many organizations that give small grants or give grants of any size, often narrow their focus and they go deep with one particular thing. If we had to say that we went deep with anything, it would be just the concept of generosity itself and the idea that ordinary people can do extraordinary things in their local communities. We don't like to come in and say, let's fix this problem. Instead, what we like to do is come in and say, we want to meet the people in this community who are wise and strong and who have lived through something and now want to give back in some important and particular way. And I like to say that our Bread for the Journey people love saying yes. So when someone comes to us and they are seeking a grant, and the grants could be, you know, $500 or $1,000 or $1,500, but usually they're under $3,000. They come to us and say, I'd like to talk with you about getting a grant. And so what we do is meet them for a cup of tea or a meal and have them just sit down and tell us what it is they're doing in the community that's making the community better. And if we feel like the fit is right, we'll give a grant. And sometimes it's a one-time project, and sometimes it's the first grant in a project that becomes a very big community-wide project. We don't discriminate in that area. And really what we're trying to do, our vision statement is to nurture the seed of generosity in every human heart. And our work really is with us in terms of how is it that we can give freely? How is it that we can give with no strings attached? How is it that we can give in the most simple way possible? Sort of like restoring lost cultural patterns of care in the community. So that's who Bread for the Journey is. And I hope that if you're interested in what I say, you'll go to our website at breadforthejourney.org. Perhaps you're somebody who might like to start a chapter in your community, or perhaps you think you might be able to help us in some other ways, a potential board member or making a donation or telling us about a project that you think is a worthy project that needs funding in your community. Please go to our website at breadforthejourney.org. If you want to find out if there is a Bread for the Journey chapter in your community, go to the link that says Find a Chapter. So now I'd like to turn our attention to our guest for the day, Christine, and her full name is Christine Ostertang Timmons, but she likes to be called Chris. So I'm going to call her Chris in this interview. On her way home from a carefree day at the beach, Chris was in a car accident that left her quadriplegic. And 4 years later, an unexpected divorce came, and then after that, a diagnosis of stage 4 breast cancer. And everyone in life has adversity. We all have some things that happen in a lifetime, but few of us have been given this much. And yet, Christine has found a way to live a happy life. She was a teacher for 39 years, 32 of those in a wheelchair. She's a speaker, an author, a community service advocate, and as I said earlier, a good friend and inspiration to many people. So please join us. Please join us in welcoming Christine to the show. Welcome, Christine.
Thank you. Thank you. It's good to be here.
Yeah, glad to have you here. In the first segment of this show, I'd like to perhaps focus a little on the early days when you had the accident and were beginning to understand the changes your body was demanding of you. I understand you had plans to move to Oregon, and in the midst of packing, you took one last trip to the beach.
That's right. I loved being in San Diego on the beach, but my husband said if I wanted to have a family, he didn't want to raise kids in a large city. So we were moving up to Bend, where my sister was, to really start thinking about starting a family.
Mm-hmm.
So that was worth it to me to leave this beautiful San Diego.
Which is where you're still living.
It is where I'm still.
All right, right.
Yes.
So you took one last trip to the beach, and what happened on the way home?
You know, the doctors have never been quite sure, but I was in my little dream car. I had a BMW. And I turned the air conditioning on, and they think that perhaps I had something like a reverse heat stroke where my body cooled down too quickly, probably in conjunction with being dehydrated. I just got dizzy and knew I needed to make it through it was Memorial Day weekend at the beach, so there's people everywhere. And I knew I needed to make it through this left-hand turn lane, and then I would pull over. But I blacked out somewhere in the middle of that turn, and my car kept going several hundred yards until it crashed into a cement embankment.
Mm.
So, and that was before seatbelt laws. So it was a pretty serious crash.
And you woke up in the hospital. Why don't you tell us, maybe paint a little picture today of your abilities and the disabilities you live with. What can you do and what do you need help with?
Well, my strength came back over several years. While I was in rehab, which was for more than 6 months, I learned how to use a splint to write some letters that were maybe an inch, you know, large and very shaky because let me go back. My left arm is completely paralyzed and everything under my chest is completely paralyzed. But I got some movement back in my right arm. Mm-hmm. I couldn't really lift it up, but they taught me how to train the large muscle in my shoulder to make fine motor movements, you know, like out of pen.
And mm-hmm.
it was strapped onto my hand. And then I eventually, after I got home, I started being able to lift up a spoon of mashed potatoes without dropping it in my lap. And that, you know, as my arm got stronger and stronger, I learned to be able to feed myself. And then I could drive a motorized chair with my right arm. And after 6 years, my arm was strong enough to be able to teach me how to drive in a van that I drive with my head. There's things coming down with a straw in my mouth. I push buttons and then I steer with something very much like the joystick on a wheelchair.
Mm-hmm.
So with just what I had left with this right arm, it's given me independence to do those types of things on my own. But I can't dress myself or put on my makeup or prepare a meal or, you know, any of those kinds of things. So I have a live-in caregiver and she'll, you know, get me up and ready and off to work in the morning. And then she's here in the evening when I come back. So
that's how
my life has been going.
I understand. So she's there part of the time. She's there in the morning to help you, and then she's there at the end of the day to help you. And you make it through the day with just your service dog and you.
That's right. Yes. And a lot of student helpers.
Uh-huh. And I see this beautiful picture. I've seen it on the cover of your book of your service dog, this beautiful, sweet dog. Introduce us to, is it a her or a he?
It's Ben. It's Ben. Benny, he's on the bed next to me right now,
uh-huh.
And he's an English yellow lab, so uh-huh. His nose is a little shorter than most Labrador retrievers, and his feet are a little shorter. He's just really handsome, and he's my third service dog. I started with my first one in the early 90s, and unfortunately, they don't live long enough.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's suddenly training one all over again. But they're not puppies when you get them. They've been trained. Is that correct?
Yes. It takes 20 to 24 months to really bring a dog all the way. The last 18 months, you're training, you know, the handler is training with the dog, but they go through a lot of training before you receive them.
Right. Particularly in a situation like you where there's so many great needs I hadn't planned on going off on the trail with the dog, but I'm curious, just one quick thing. Tell me some of the things that your dog does for you.
He knows about 89 different commands, but I don't use them all the time.
Uh-huh.
But if I drop something like my keys, he gets them and puts them back on my lap.
Uh-huh.
If there's something in front of me that the wheelchair can't go around, which is usually one of his toys, but if there's something there, he knows the command, move it. He can turn on lights and turn off lights. The way they were in my classroom, I could not reach them. They were both too high and kind of in a corner wall that I couldn't get to. So that was his job every morning and afternoon. And he can do, he can pull something so that he could open a cabinet door, and he can push drawers closed. Mm-hmm. So it's amazing the kinds of things.
Really, really incredible. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's beautiful.
He can bring the phone to me, but I've not worked with that much because with my hands paralyzed, I can't really use the phone. I have a different kind that uses a remote, so.
Uh-huh. Right. But you can take calls that we can call and you can answer and like the conversation we're having today. So, we've got just another couple of minutes before we close this first segment. And, I wanted to, just touch base a little bit on, a couple of other things that happened and then after the accident, you began doing some therapy, and then at some point, your husband decided he didn't want to remain married. Did that come as a surprise to you?
It came as an absolute shock. Right. I don't know if I had been in denial. I thought I was married to Superman, and that if any man could get through this, he could. But yes, it did come as a shock. But he told me on the way to my first counseling session. So he was kind of shocked me and then left me in good hands.
Mm-hmm, right. And you did have a great therapist that helped walk you through what probably was a couple of years. I mean, I don't know how long it took, but you're dealing with all the physical disabilities and then the loss of a love. It feels like such a huge transition, and it was good that you were in therapy. Yes.
Yeah. It took me 4 years before I even realized I needed it. Because I just jumped back into anything that seemed familiar.
Mm-hmm.
While I was in rehab, my husband had to buy a single-story home. That was a change. But I just kind of jumped in and never dealt with anything. So therapy took a few years, but I learned some great lessons.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to talk about those lessons. That's really what the focus of our second segment is. The strategies that you used to get you through this experience and having you, I mean, to this day, writing a book called The Upside of Down. So to our listening audience, please stay with us. We'll be back in just a few minutes with Chris Timmons.
Now you don't have to stay linked to your desktop or laptop. Take Voice America on the go and listen anywhere. Get our mobile app for iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android at the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
Adoption changes a family forever, for the adopters as well as the adoptees. There are many adjustments that need to be made, from lifestyle to financial, and the personal rewards are unlimited. Listen every week for Your Adoption Coach with Kelly Ellison. We will examine in detail such topics as international and domestic adoption. We will talk with adoption professionals and hear stories about real families adopting. If you've been thinking about adoption or recently began the process, you'll want to tune in to be inspired every Saturday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, noon Pacific, on Voice America Variety.
What would you do if you knew that you could not fail? The Dr. Pat Show with Dr. Pat Basile is a radio forum for some of the world's most influential people in the fields of health, wellness, and human potential. Dr. Pat brings together and introduces visionary scientists and futurists, environmentalists, educators, business leaders, inventors, filmmakers, authors, artists, mystics, and healers who inspire and support individual and collective growth and positive cultural shifts. This award-winning radio show empowers the listening community to be the change they want to see in the world. Tune in every Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific for the Dr. Pat Show with Dr. Pat Basile, radio to thrive by.
The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com.
You are tuned in to Bread for the Journey, ordinary people doing extraordinary deeds, with your host, Mariana Cacciatore. If you have a question or comment about the program, or have an idea for a person you would like featured on a future program, please send an email to bfjradio@gmail.com. That's BFJRADIO at gmail.com. And now, back to Bread for the Journey.
Welcome back, and we're here today talking with Christine Ostertag Timmons, the author of the book, The Upside of Down. In our first segment, we got a picture of the accident and following divorce, a little bit about what abilities Chris has as a quadriplegic, what parts of her body she can use, and where she needs help. And in our second segment, I would like us to focus a bit on the strategies that you used to help get you through the day. There are different chapters in your book with lessons what I understand is that the reason you wanted to write the book in the first place was that you wanted to share lessons about the things that helped get you through. Is that correct?
That is correct. Yes.
Yeah. So there's one particular chapter called From Victim to Victor. Do you want to just paint the picture for us about what it felt like to be the victim, what kinds of things were going through your head, and how you began to move away from that?
Okay. This is one of the strongest lessons I learned actually in my counseling sessions. So by that time, I had already been quadriplegic for little over 4 years, maybe five, and I knew that I was about to become a single woman. So every session that I went to, it seemed like worse and worse things were happening to me. It was, an attendant didn't show up, or I got a really bad infection and ended up in the emergency room. There were just things that seemed huge that just kept happening. And I learned how to kind of see the signs of when I was playing a victim, feeling cheated or blaming others or feeling very, very sorry for myself. I was really thinking only about problems, never solutions. And I just feel like my whole world had shrunk down just to the size of my problems. I was no longer seeing anything beautiful or good. I was miserable.
Mm-hmm.
And my therapist, Dr. Laverty, was really very gentle in helping me discover and see myself like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that other people have said that, we can become paralyzed, not just physically with our bodies, but in mind and spirit,
right,
to the point where we're incapable of thought or action.
Right.
So,
yeah. And it's so, it seems so understandable. I imagine that other people you would talk to could buy into it very easily and support the whole idea of the victim part of you that was
right,
so prevalent.
That's so true. Being people trying to be sympathetic and empathetic, and yes, that's so
yeah,
true.
Yeah, and then it just reinforces that whole idea. And so how, just one tiny little thing, how do you stop thinking that way?
Well, I just, I really, this was a long lesson, and it took a lot of learning, but I think that first thing I had to do is stop blaming other people. You know, there's a lot that I may talk about later about taking responsibility for one's life. That's huge, huge. And then also deciding that you want a good life. You know, we have a choice of life or death. And I just had to convince myself that I was choosing life. And
right.
So, and my therapist kept telling me that I couldn't go around the pain. I had to work through it. If I was going to get past it, I had to work through it.
Mm-hmm.
So what I learned is that I needed to learn how to take some confident steps toward a goal. And for instance, I didn't want to get stranded by a caregiver again. And so I needed to think proactively and always have a backup plan. And maybe beyond a plan B, I needed a plan C or a plan D.
Right.
And even today, if I know I'm going to be home all day on my own, I'll check around just to see what neighbors are home, just in case I needed to call somebody. You know, it's just part of my life now that I always try to live each day proactively so that, you know, I learned to take cranberry juice to stop getting so many bladder infections. You know, there's just little things about managing my life that I needed to learn and be responsible for.
It's, you know, as you said, this list of things, you know, the one that really looms large in my mind is that you wanted life. I mean, I think at some point you had to really be clear that you wanted to live.
Mm-hmm.
That had to be the foundation of it, right?
And right. And not just being alive, but living a quality life.
Right.
And,
right.
You know, a choice for that.
Right, right. So in the moment when you catch yourself feeling sorry for yourself, I imagine over time you began to identify what those thoughts were and say, oh, this is one of those moments when I'm playing victim here and I don't want to do that.
That is so right.
Yeah, you make a choice. Yeah. And then from there you begin to develop a set of practices that help you shift your thinking from victim to victor, as you say.
I learned to ask for help.
Right.
Something I still learn daily is patience. When you can't do much for yourself and you're waiting on other people, I can even live with a spider web someplace without panicking until somebody can come take it down. You know, it's a
right.
crazy example, but you know, I was not a very patient person.
Interesting. So, you know, stopping blaming others, I heard you say, taking responsibility for your own life, wanting to live a quality life, and taking confident steps toward a goal of probably, you could just say the main goal being, I want to live a quality life, and how is it that I do that?
But we have to start in baby steps.
Yeah, right, yeah. So what is that one of those goals? For example.
Well, I just want to back up to one other. You listed so many of my points beautifully. Thank you. I started looking for good in situations and
beautiful.
Starting using a lot of lessons in gratitude, just being thankful for the things. And the more things I would think of, the more that came to mind. And I know you've done interviews on gratitude before, and
right.
it's one of the things that's definitely was a positive step forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the practice of at least once a day sitting down and just saying, what are all the things I'm grateful for? If you're a person who isn't sort of automatically going to that view, it helps to have a practice where you're beginning to do that because it changes who we are. It's suddenly those things, you begin to see how many of them there are. They multiply and multiply. It's that thing you were talking about of what view do I want, you know? Do I want to see the world as a victim, or do I want to be stronger than that? And it really is how we look at the world. And the more work we do around gratitude, the more it becomes natural for us to see. And then I imagine things like learning to ask for help then begins to open up this whole community of people who really do want to help.
That's so very true. And that was a whole nother lesson, is that when you're going through something painful, so many people tend to retreat. They don't feel like they're fun to be around, or, you know, they just go into themselves. Some people just crawl into bed. But, you know, to remember that our faith and our family and our friends, you know, we need that support. We need the community around us to really help us through.
Right.
And,
right.
So.
And for them, there's a reciprocal thing. There's this whole, you know, I think what one of the things that Wayne, the founder of Bread for the Journey, had said in a talk, and I just thought it was fabulous. He said, you know, there's this circle of giving and receiving that needs to be kept fluid, you know, and it's just like the in-breath and the out-breath. If you're just breathing in, you're going to die. And if you're just breathing out, you're going to die.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
It's so true. So in the giving, you know, as you begin to reach out to neighbors and ask for help and they come forward and want to help, then you're really learning the art of receiving that help in a really profound way if you're living with disabilities as you are. But how important it is that you don't just see yourself as the asker and them as the givers, but that there's this really fluid dance of giving and receiving, and everybody's receiving some part of that circle at any one time, almost gets to the point where you can't tell who's the giver and who's the receiver in any one exchange.
That does happen when it's really working well.
Yeah. I know my mother and father are living in a retirement community now. And, you know, I was one of the very biggest advocates of them staying home in their beautiful home. But I was wrong. I was really wrong. When they finally moved into this retirement community, the sense of, and I'd love to open up this as a discussion with you about community, the sense of community that they, the socialization and the sense of community. And a big part of it is my mother being in a role of helping others. It's really important to her. And she also receives help. There's a beautiful, really rich thing that's happening in their lives that they weren't getting living alone in their home.
Oh, yes. I see that happening. You know, I'm remembering the song right now by Barbara Streisand, People, about, well, I don't know if she wrote it, but she sang it. People who need people are the luckiest people in the world. Now, when that came out, I didn't really understand that because, you know, I was kind of brought up in a German household where if you want it done, you do it yourself and, you know, to be independent and all of that. And then as I started meeting more and more people because of perhaps my need for something, I just, you know, more beautiful relationships developed, and I found out that even in a paralyzed body, that there were things I could do for other people that I would have never known had I not, you know, needed them to begin with.
Said so beautifully. Really said so beautifully, Chris. One of the chapters in your book is discovering joy. And I think part of our conversation is leading there. I mean, I'm getting a picture of you as a vital and vibrant person living in your community, receiving and giving in many ways to your community. Certainly your career did that as well. But tell us about this sort of movement into discovering joy.
Well, I think that when I got it, really got the message that it was up to me, I needed to take responsibility for my life, for my future, for my happiness. When I really got that through books, through things I was reading, things really changed for me. I mean, I was doing fine getting to school every day, and I enjoyed students and teaching, and I felt like I had a meaningful career, but I wasn't really thinking about, you know, beyond that, what brings me joy. And, you know, that there's a real famous now quote about life is not waiting for the storm to pass. It's about learning to dance in the rain.
Mm-hmm, right.
So I felt like there was still one more leap to get to that point of celebrating my life and who I was, and accepting that I was in a wheelchair and I was, you know, but I still have a loving family, a good career, a wonderful church. And I just needed to embrace that. Mm-hmm. Again, it's kind of part of that finding gratitude and thankfulness. And I think when we get to that point, we can then really find joy in our lives. You know, it's hard to use happy or content or joy, but I like the word joy. I feel like my life is a joyous life. And I always thought that was going to come when I retired, you know, and I began to realize that you don't have to wait.
Right. So, right. It's here right in this very moment.
It is.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I began to find things that were meaningful to me. How to recognize when something comes into my life that not only is it meaningful, but that it will bring a fullness to my life, like working with service dogs. You know, mm-hmm. things began to come up that kind of grabbed my heart, and mm-hmm. I began to recognize that. So,
well, and we're going to talk a little bit more about that particular thing in the next segment. We're about to take a break, but when we come back, we're going to talk about, in your teaching career, you did some very satisfying work with teenagers who wanted to do community service work. And, since Bread for the Journey works so much in the field of volunteerism and service work, I thought it might be perfect in our third segment for us to talk about that. So, to our listening audience, please stay with us. We'll be back with Chris Timmons in just a moment.
Think you've seen everything there is to see in online television? Let us surprise you. Visit voiceamerica.tv today for sports, health, business, and more on demand 24/7.
Many people are seeking to make a difference in the world, but few actually have the tools to do so. Every week, host Mary Beth Lodge and her guests will have you thinking forward and will give you the tips to keep your life, goals, priorities, and choices on track. The result is an easier, happier, and more inspired life. The name of the program is What Matters. Tune in every Wednesday at 9 a.m. Eastern Time, 6 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. What really matters is the positive changes that you'll bring to your life and the world just by listening.
These days, everyone is looking for information on staying young, healthy, and fit. The Voice America Health and Wellness Network is here to help you on your quest to better health and a better you. We talk about everything from diet, fitness, and aging to substance abuse, personal growth, mental health, and much more. Learn from our experts who cover health and wellness from traditional and holistic perspectives. Tune in to the Voice America Health and Wellness Network. Healthy living starts here.
Stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time.
The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
You are tuned in to Bread for the Journey, ordinary people doing extraordinary deeds, with your host, Mariana Cacciatore. If you have a question or comment about the program, or have an idea for a person you would like featured on a future program, please send an email to bfjradio@gmail.com. That's bfjradio@gmail.com. And now, back to Bread for the Journey.
Welcome back, and we're here talking with Christine Ostertang Timmons, the author of the book, The Upside of Down. And as promised, in our third segment, we thought we'd talk about the work that she did, that she says is very satisfying work with teenagers who wanted to do community service work. And I think we're going to open with a story about one of the young people she worked with. Go ahead, Chris.
Thank you. In our particular senior high school, there is a time at the end of the year when students have to do senior projects. They can opt out of a project by writing a 25-page term paper, but most chose not to do that. And the projects were usually not anything that, you know, I can even remember after sitting on panels for years and years. But one year, three girls came to me and asked if I would be their mentor through the process. Every senior needed a faculty mentor. And their project, one of the girls' mothers had just been diagnosed with breast cancer. And so they wanted to create an event to raise money for the Susan B. Coleman, Coleman Breast Cancer Fund. And, you know, it sounded interesting to me. And I said, of course, I'll help you through that. Well, these girls at 17 created this event, starting with all the planning. They did all the planning, all the designing, picked a date. It was around our own campus, got the permit from the city, rented the space from the school district. They got T-shirts designed. They had signups, advertising, radio advertising. They ended this 5K walkabout with music and raffles and a climbing wall, an art show. It was just a celebration at the end. And when I think about the number of hours, probably each girl put 100 hours into this. It was a 3-month. They started right at the beginning of, you know, a 3-month time of planning. And for me to see the amount of detail that they could think of on their own, you know, I was there as a mentor to be sure that the permits were pulled or remind them to check with somebody that they might need permission from, or, you know, find the machine that measures the ground so you know when you, what you need to do to get to 5K.
Yeah.
But they just amazed me. Every day they'd come in at noon with more projects or more details. And the love that they had of providing this community event and their desire to raise money for something that was touching them personally was just one of the most heartwarming experiences I've ever had.
And you are a breast cancer survivor.
Yes, I am. And they knew that also. So, yeah.
Right. So I'm sure in some way it contributed to their desire to fund this particular thing and to have you as their advisor through the experience.
We were a strong team. And they even, I mean, they followed it through to the completion of not only just, of having several other volunteers. They included the whole Key Club, 100 student organization to, you know, to volunteer with them. But they took care of the bookkeeping, the thank you letters, delivering the money they raised. It was just, it was beautiful.
So I understand that was probably an exceptional example of the kinds of things that kids, that a kid or a group of kids might have gotten involved in. Do I have that right? Is that true?
Yeah. Well, it was only three. Typically, you know, several of our students may have had a similar experience, but a whole club might be doing it. And, you know, the responsibility is divided. But
right.
for such something so large,
with
for
just
only three, yeah, that was really different.
So give me an idea of what some of the typical things were that, because, you know, when I spoke with you about this a little bit, you said it was some of the most satisfying work that you did, working with teenagers who really wanted to do community service work. So tell me a little bit more about what turned you on and what kinds of projects kids did. And
okay. Well, I want to start all the way back to where I was in high school, because that's when I was a freshman is when Kennedy died. And so his "Ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country," that was huge back then. And it left a big impact with me. And then my senior class had a class project. We didn't have individual ones, but my class went to this small school for children with autism, and we were going to be painting it and freshening it up. And that just did it for me. It was my first real experience where we were going on our own and really making a contribution that meant something. It was big and powerful. So when I became a high school teacher, I knew that I wanted to be part of providing, or, you know, giving the opportunities for students to experience that same thing that I had.
Right.
So one of my first years, there was a group called Achievers. That is service spelled backwards. Mm. And that was an honorary group where children were, the students at their senior year were picked, 10 girls and 10 guys. And it was an honor so that, they got very involved in the projects they chose. But the group that I've worked with the last 25 years is the Key Club. And this is totally voluntary. We had 100 kids actually pay dues, sometimes more like 130 or 40, at the beginning of the year, because it's an international club, so that unlike many school clubs that are free, this one you actually had to join. And these kids, whether it's giving out water at a marathon or a beach cleanup or a graffiti paint out or going out somewhere and cleaning trails and planting trees, it's student run. So they would find the activity and the leaders would provide the opportunity for everybody else to provide service. It was character building. It developed leadership skills. And these kids oftentimes, now I'm talking about 17-year-olds, they would get up at 4 o'clock on a Saturday morning, meet at the school flagpole. They would have found parents and people to drive them to get to a race by 5:30, to be in their position on time. They would spend all day doing that and come back exhausted and loving it.
And satisfied.
So satisfied. And if there's enough time, I'd like to tell you about one other one.
Yes, please do.
This is every Christmas we did an event called Spirit of Christmas. We had to actually the last few years be a little more PC and it became Spirit of the Holidays. But this was open to the whole school. And I was the advisor for this because we kind of started it through the Key Club. And groups of 3 to 6 kids would adopt a family. We worked with a social service agency where the families were already pre-screened as being, needing something for the kids and maybe a Christmas dinner. And after this went on for 20 years, and by the end, we had maybe 200 volunteers every year adopting these families. We got up to 45 or 48 families by the last year we did this. And the kids had to raise the money. They had to meet the family, fill out, sizes and ages and toys and all of that. They had to pool all the money together, go shopping, do the wrapping. But the thing that was so different, unlike taking a name off of a Christmas tree at the Target store, these kids were face-to-face with their families.
Right.
They got to see where and how the families lived and witness their needs and see the kids receive their presents and be so excited about it. And I think it kept growing every year. Some students learned about it from their older brothers and sisters, and they did it all 4 years of high school.
Mm-hmm.
Because my students are from a upper middle class neighborhood. And for them to get into some of the other areas where 4 families live in one single apartment, they didn't even know that world existed.
Right.
And so it just was so eye-opening. And my favorite part every year, they had to write a reflection at the end of it, was just seeing how really life-changing that experience was for these kids.
Yeah, it opens pathways of compassion that I think otherwise don't have an opportunity to open. It's one of the real gifts. And And then, who, you know, it's like, it's hard to track these kinds of things. Sometimes I wonder about how do we show impact? You know, you watch, you think about a kid who's gone through that all the way through high school. And how does it impact their life and any kind of service project they might do in college? Or it's such a satisfying experience. How does that impact when they begin thinking about a career for themselves and measure, you know, emotional connection to anything in their life against something that made them feel that good? And how does it impact the direction of their future lives? I think it's powerful.
I do too. I hear, excuse me, I hear back from students who have gone on. The one thing about Key Club is it's part of Kiwanis International. Mm-hmm. And so there is a Circle K that's the college equivalent. Many of them go on to even become officers at their colleges and do even bigger things. It's just, I think it just is in their hearts, and they really do carry through and continue with so many of these community projects. Service projects. Yeah, they right. stay involved in their communities.
Right, right, yeah. Yeah, it really, you know, it, as you've been talking, I've been thinking so much about one of my board members. His name is Frank Taylor, longtime board member, has had a dream that we, that as we grow at Bread for the Journey, we build communities of young people doing the work that we're doing in communities, philanthropic work. And, you know, it's a much bigger project to take on young people, particularly in a national program where you don't have a lot of, from here, from my end, I wouldn't have contact with people in San Diego or people in Kalamazoo, Michigan. And there needs to be there needs to be some resources behind it to kind of dive in and make a program work with young people. But I've been thinking a lot about it lately, because we're looking at places where we would grow. And as I was listening to you, I was really thinking about, some way of connecting Bread for the Journey to key clubs in schools everywhere that
Go ahead. Or going to say the partnership would be beautiful.
Yeah, yeah.
It would be. And then instead of doing projects that are just here and there, you know, they hear about a marathon or they hear about the beach needing to clean up, instead of doing such scattered projects, they could be connected to something more ongoing.
Right, right. You and I should have a conversation later about this. You know a lot about the Key Club, and I know a lot about Bread for the Journey, and it would be lovely to talk about possibilities.
I would love that.
That sounds really great. Well, we're coming close to our end of our show, and I want to just thank you so much, Christine, for taking the time to sit and talk with us today. This has been an enlightening conversation, and I am incredibly grateful for you and the life that you've lived. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for including me.
You're welcome. You're quite an inspiration.
Thank you.
And to our listening audience, Bread for the Journey, as you know, is a nonprofit organization, and as such, we could always use your support. If you like the work that we're doing at Bread for the Journey, and if you find a place in your heart to make a financial contribution, or if you'd like to start a chapter of Bread for the Journey in your town, please go to our website at breadforthejourney.org, and I believe that if we all pitch in a little bit, we can change the world. And so I close today, as I do every show, with the following. May all beings be happy. May all beings be safe. May all beings be free.
We hope our program inspired you this week. Please join Mariana Cacciatore for another edition of Bread for the Journey next Saturday at noon Eastern Time, 9 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. Enjoy the rest of your weekend.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.